Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the pod. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler and can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball related from Sunday, July 26th. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league, kicking things off with the bad news as outfielder Cody Bellinger was placed on the 10-day IL with a hamstring strain. Bellinger is undergoing further testing to determine the severity of the strain, but he'll miss at least a couple of weeks, opening up a platoon in left field for the Yankees for outfielder Spencer Jones, who was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. On the short side of that left field platoon replacing Cody Bellinger will be Max Schumann. Next, we have starting pitcher Mike Paredes, who was placed on the 15-day IL with an oblique strain. Paredes is likely to miss 3 to 5 weeks with that strain. He had already been removed from the rotation and replaced by Kendry Rojas as the Twins' swingman. So with reliever Cole Sands returning from the IL in a corresponding move, he will replace Paredes in more of a traditional relief role. Sands missed the past 3 months with a forearm strain, and having missed so much time, Sands is going to need to reestablish himself as a high leverage reliever for the Twins. Next, catcher Shea Langeliers was placed on the 10-day IL with a torn meniscus in his right knee. Langeliers earned his first All-Star selection this year, mashing 23 homers with a 127 WRC+. But shortly after the midseason break, the backstop suffered a knee injury that could threaten the rest of his campaign if it requires surgery. It's a huge blow to an A's club that is already out of playoff contention. However, they are well-equipped to handle the significant absence of Langeliers. The A's reinforced their catching core earlier this year with the acquisition of Jonah Heim, who will slot in as the A's everyday catcher moving forward. Heim has performed admirably since landing in California via a trade with the Braves, batting .233 with 8 homers and a 92 WRC+. And in a corresponding move, Brian Servin was recalled from the minors, and he'll be the backup to Jonah Heim in Sacramento. In terms of transactions, starting pitcher Connelly Early was traded by the Red Sox to the Nationals in exchange for third baseman Curtis Meade. Early has one more year of team control remaining, more than Curtis Meade. Meade will be a free agent in 2031, early in 2032. But Early is currently on the IL recovering from elbow inflammation. However, he's both an immediate and future upgrade to the Nationals rotation. He performed incredibly in his debut campaign in 2025 and has been awesome this year prior to his injury. Definitely a bit up and down, but he's certainly somebody that is going to be a great contributor to the Nationals for the next 5 or so years. Meade, going the other way, will contribute at third base, second base, and DH for the Red Sox. He mashes left-handed pitchers and provides some depth versus right-handed pitchers as well. He's had a post-hype breakout campaign at 25 years old. After failing to establish himself with multiple organizations, he was actually DFA'd by the White Sox earlier this year, but Meade has batted .254 with 17 homers and a 134 WRC+ on the year. Definitely a surprising trade, but a win-win potential for both sides. With Meade out of the Nationals lineup, they recalled Brady House from the minors. He will be the Nationals everyday third baseman moving forward. Next, we have starting pitcher Carson Wisenhunt, who was recalled from the minors to start for the Giants versus the Angels. He tossed 5 innings, allowing 5 hits and 4 runs, walking 2 while striking out 7, but he induced 18 whiffs with 38% CSW across 78 pitches. A pair of homers ruined this line for Wisenhunt, but he looked better than ever, dominating with his changeup to the tune of 15 whiffs and 52% CSW, thanks to pristine locations, low and arm side, in concert with high four-seamers and low sliders. There is plenty of potential in Wisenhunt's arm, and he should have a guaranteed rotation spot moving forward, with Trevor McDonald dealing with an elbow sprain and both Robbie Ray and Tyler Molly expected to be dealt at the trade deadline. I'd be grabbing Wisenhunt in deeper leagues, probably 15 teams and deeper, even with the lefty killing Padres up next. Reliever Tristan Beck was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Next, starting pitcher Connor Prelip was activated from the 15-day IL after missing a couple of weeks with a finger blister. He started versus the A's, tossing 5 2/3 innings, allowing 2 hits with 1 run, 1 walk, and 5 strikeouts, inducing 9 whiffs with 24% CSW across 72 pitches. With a blister affecting Prelip's ability to spin the ball, he instead incorporated a sinker 18% more often than usual to throw fastballs, sinkers, and four-seamers 57% of the time. It somehow worked as he threw just enough curveballs near the zone to remain competitive. However, with Prelip's signature slider being thrown just 9 times and secondaries combining for 48% strikes, I worry that the blister will affect Prelip too much to dominate a stronger lineup than the A's on the road here. Prelip's fastballs are not his strong point and are unlikely to carry the load in Seattle next. Reliever Jack Anderson was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And lastly, starting pitcher Ranger Suarez was activated from the 15-day IL after missing a couple of weeks with an adductor strain. He started versus the Blue Jays, tossing 4 scoreless innings, allowing just 4 hits, walking nobody while fanning 6. He induced 6 whiffs with 31% CSW across 64 pitches. And Suarez was limited in the pitch count category in his return from the IL as expected, but he looked like his typical self while dominating across 4 frames. Suarez will get a real test of his health in LA against the Dodgers up next. Reliever Alec Gamboa was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And in terms of news, relief pitcher Jose Urquidy is expected to be traded by the Pirates to the White Sox in exchange for minor league reliever Felix Doroteo. Reliever Scott Blewett is also expected to be traded by the Cardinals to the A's in exchange for cash considerations. We also have some IL returnees. Starting pitcher Max Scherzer is expected to be activated from the 15-day IL today to start in our nation's capital against the Nationals. Scherzer has been out for a month and a half with back spasms. Outfielder Kike Hernandez is also expected to return from the 10-day IL, though that will be tomorrow. Hernandez has missed about 2 months with an oblique strain. So Kike Hernandez returning to the Dodgers lineup. He's likely to face mostly left-handed pitchers on some sort of short side platoon or maybe as a super utility option. And lastly, closing pitcher Edwin Diaz is expected to be activated from the 60-day IL on Wednesday. He had surgery to remove loose bodies from his elbow back in late April, but he's made his return 3 months later. Edwin Diaz back to the Dodgers later this week. Will he take the closer role over immediately? I doubt it, but I think the Dodgers will eventually want him to take over that closer role. That would free up Tanner Scott to pitch in more high leverage situations. And I think if you have Tanner Scott, you will be fine holding him because I think there will be enough wins and save opportunities to go around that Diaz and Scott can split them. And I don't think Diaz will take over that role immediately. However, I do think that if you can trade Scott at pretty close to full value of him being the Dodgers closer currently, then I would definitely try to deal him before it's too late. Now we can take a look at our notable performances from Sunday, a day in which we had a full slate of 15 games. We'll start it off with our hitters, leading off with first baseman Munetaka Murakami, who helped the White Sox to win against the Astros, going 3-for-5 with 3 runs, 2 home runs, and 6 runs batted in. He's up to 22 homers now. The first one went 385 feet at 104 miles per hour, and the second one went 398 feet at 102 miles per hour. And since returning from the IL a couple weeks ago prior to the All-Star break, Murakami hadn't gone deep at all, but he broke the seal with the second multi-homer game of his career. Obviously, that's just this season, but 2 multi-homer games this season for Murakami. The lefty slugger will continue to provide great power without great contributions in the batting average and stolen base departments, making him more of a 3-category contributor. However, the .239 batting average he has this year hasn't really hurt you that much. The 1 stolen base, though, is pretty empty. However, you can't really complain about 22 homers and a .921 OPS from Murakami. Next, we have shortstop Jeremy Peña on the opposite side of that one as the Astros lost on the south side of Chicago. Peña went 2-for-4 with 2 runs, 2 home runs, and 2 runs batted in. He's up to 11 homers now. The first one went 393 feet at 98 miles per hour, and the second one went 394 feet at 107 miles per hour. Peña has discovered his power stroke amid a hot streak that has seen him record a hit in 16 straight games, so a 16-game hit streak for Peña across the past few weeks. And during that time, he's batted 406 with 5 homers, all of which have come in the past six games. If last year's breakout seemed unsustainable from Jeremy Peña, he's put those doubts to rest with a superior offensive campaign in 2026 that has seen him post an 877 OPS while batting 319 on the season. Let's just pray Peña stays healthy, as he's already spent time on the IL twice this year. Next, we have shortstop CJ Abrams, who helped the Nationals to win against the Diamondbacks, going 3-for-5 with 2 runs, 2 home runs, and 3 runs batted in. He's up to 27 homers now. The first one went 390 feet at 102 miles per hour, and the second one went 399 feet at 104 miles per hour. Abrams leads MLB with 82 runs batted in this year. He's also fifth in MLB with a 940 OPS, and his 27 homers are the seventh most in Major League Baseball. Abrams' production has typically dropped off in the second half, but he's done the opposite this year, taking an already incredible season to the next level. He's gone deep 7 times in his last 7 games, and this is the peak prospect evaluators envisioned from the 2019 sixth overall pick, CJ Abrams. His teammate also had a great game, as outfielder James Wood helped the Nationals to win against the Arizona Diamondbacks. He went 2-for-4 with 2 runs, 2 home runs, 3 RBIs, and a walk for good measure. It was his He's up to 30 homers now. The first one went 430 feet at 108 miles per hour, and the second one went 418 feet at 110 miles per hour. Wood leads MLB with 96 runs, which is impressive by itself, but it's 24 more than the next guy, the second place guy in that category is Yordan Alvarez. Wood also leads MLB with his 82 walks. He's second in MLB with his 953 OPS. He's got the fifth most homers with 30 on the year, and he's got the fifth most runs batted in at 72. Just an incredible season for James Wood thus far. And he's actually a superior hitter than CJ Abrams, which says a lot because Abrams has been so good this year. And Wood became the fifth player this year to join the 30 home run club as he continues his ascension. He's still just 23 years old, and he's having one of the best seasons by a player that young, rivaled only by probably future Hall of Famers Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, Albert Pujols, Juan Soto, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Fernando Tatis Jr., and Cody Bellinger this century. There's some arguments about the validity of Vladdy and Tatis and Bellinger being future Hall of Famers, but there's no arguing that those are some of the best players in baseball by how they performed when they were super young in their early 20s. So Wood is setting himself apart as one of the best hitters of a generation and looks to be having a bright future ahead of him. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Sunday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances, opening with Jacob Mizorowski, who helped the Brewers to win against the Rockies, tossing 5 innings, allowing 1 hit and 1 run, walking nobody while fanning 12. He induced 26 whiffs with 41% CSW across 83 pitches, and Mizorowski earned the golden goal as he led baseball with those 26 whiffs to earn the Gallows Pole, and he earned the King Cole by leading baseball with that 41% CSW. You really have to talk about him every start because he's just been so absolutely incredible this year, and this start was just another one where he continues to break records and exceed expectations. Or I don't know how he can exceed expectations after he's done so much already, but he continues to do so. Mizorowski set the Brewers franchise record with 7 consecutive strikeouts to open this game. So there's your record. And then exceeding expectations, this is a guy who's had incredible average fastball velocity, usually around 101.5 miles per hour. Yesterday, Mizorowski averaged 102.8 miles per hour on his four-seam fastball. And throwing it that hard, he decided, you know, I'm just going to only throw it. He threw it 80% of the time, and it induced 23 whiffs. Absolutely insane work from Jacob Mizorowski. He leads baseball with his 1.58 ERA, his 0.75 whip, his 149 batting average against, and with 185 strikeouts. It's been one of the most dominant pitching campaigns I've ever witnessed. Next, we have Drew Rasmussen, who helped the Rays to win against the Guardians, tossing 7 shutout innings, allowing 1 hit and 1 walk while striking out 9. He induced 18 whiffs with 36% CSW across 87 pitches. Rasmussen's 0.93 whip on the year is tied for the best mark in the American League. And on Sunday, he had the best changeup feel I've seen from him all year. He's been looking to incorporate that pitch to support his trio of fastball variants. And he was able to keep it low and arm side consistently to induce 5 whiffs and 3 strikeouts against a left-handed batter heavy lineup with 4 seamers and sinkers dominating upstairs and cutters jamming batter's glove side. The Guardians were absolutely flummoxed against Drew Rasmussen. And I'm happy to see the strikeouts return with nine here after he fanned five or fewer in his previous five starts. Drew Rasmussen is an ace. And lastly, we have Cal Leahy, who did all he could, but the Cardinals lost to the Reds. He tossed six innings, allowing six hits and two earned runs, walking one while fanning nine. He induced 10 whiffs with 32% CSW across 102 pitches. And Leahy set a career high with nine punchouts, but it was unsustainable as expected, as he induced just 10 whiffs and was efficient in two strike counts with a 50% put away rate. This was a game of sweeper and slider domination, as Leahy rarely got them low, but when he did, they induced whiffs and strikeouts despite coming in a tick slower. Leahy has pretty great stuff, but he rarely commands and executes it to achieve his potential. So it's best to avoid Leahy versus the Blue Jays next. However, he's a great stream against the Rockies on the road afterwards. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Sunday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out their relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, Jackson Ferris got the final two outs of the game to record the first save of his career. That was after Sam Bachman couldn't find his control and got into trouble attempting to record that save. Brian Baker pitched a hitless ninth for his 28th save. Clayton Beter recorded his 10th save with a scoreless ninth. Mason Montgomery worked around a two-run homer for his second save, and it wasn't the best showing in what may be his first shot as the Pirates closer. Steven Cruz pitched a scoreless ninth for his second save. Both he and Alex Lang have two saves this week, so the question is worth begging, who is the closer? Mason Miller pitched a perfect ninth for his National League leading 27th save. Julian Garcia worked around the zombie runner scoring in the 10th to record his first save for the Reds. And lastly, Andres Munoz struck out the side in order to record his 18th save. And in terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Tyler Wells pitched a hitless 10th in a tie game. Andrew Kittredge allowed the zombie runner to score in the 11th to take his third loss. Raisel Iglesias allowed an unearned run in the ninth to blow his second save. The Braves would go on to win that game in 11 innings. Devin Williams struck out three in a scoreless ninth with a five-run lead. He hadn't pitched since last Tuesday, so this was a maintenance outing. Speaking of maintenance outings, Pete Fairbanks pitched a perfect ninth, trailing by two. He hadn't pitched since last Sunday, so Fairbanks got a little extra work to stay hot. And lastly, Grant Taylor pitched a hitless seventh up by two to record his seventh hold. But if you'd like more information on relief pitchers, check out Rick Graham's daily articles over on pitcherlist.com. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now we'll look forward to Monday, July 27th, a day in which we'll have just 12 games on our slate. My matchup of the day is Zach Thornton versus Martin Perez. Not the most impressive pitching matchup, but Thornton has looked very good since being recalled recently. I'm excited to see if he can keep that up against the Braves. And Martin Perez has been awesome all year, but it seemed like his hot streak came to an end. Can he recover the form that made him so surprisingly good throughout the first half? In terms of probable starters, we've got five guys in the auto starts tier, including the likes of Zach Wheeler in Miami, Chase Burns versus the Guardians, and Max Fried on the south side of Chicago. Our probably starts tier has two guys, and our questionable starts tier has four, and that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Brandon Sproat in San Francisco. I don't feel too confident in Sproat. He's been very inefficient this year, but he has proven capable of attaining a ceiling if he's able to throw enough strikes and end at-bats early, so there's definitely potential against the weak Giants lineup in pitch friendly Oracle Park. I'd also keep an eye out for Kumar Rocker versus the Mariners. Not my favorite start, but Rocker has proven capable of having success every once in a while. The Mariners lineup isn't super scary, especially in pitcher friendly Globe Life Field. So if you're desperate, target Kumar Rocker as a streamer. In terms of hitter suggestions, I'd look at Brewers and Giants hitters in Oracle Park, as we'll see Brandon Sproat and his 5.09 ERA square off against Tyler Molly and his 5.31 ERA. I'd also target Guardians and Reds hitters in Great American Ballpark. It's one of the best hitters parks in baseball, and we'll see Slade Ciccone square off against Chase Burns in that one. And lastly, I'd target Red Sox and A's hitters in Sutter Health Park, one of the most friendly offensive parks. We'll see Peyton Tolley square off against Jack Perkins in that one. And now we can close things out with our relievers to watch. We have just one. Clayton Beter has pitched on back-to-back days, so expect Orlando Ribalta to be the temporary closer for the Nationals on Monday. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all of the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler, where I do daily SP streamers and I break down every single start via the Pitcher List stats player cards. Tune into YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast. And make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.